Good salary day. Good afternoon.
No, let's say it properly. Good teachers and police and who are the other public servants?
Nurses. When do those guys get paid?
Okay, let's just also throw the nurses in there. Nurses and all those guys, you know, happy salary day.
Happy salary week.
You know.
Uh huh.
We also think about you. We are throwing out a shout out.
You know, just out, out of curiosity for all, police officers and teachers. Do you guys like feel like, you know, this terrible every month end when we get paid? Or is it just me?
When everyone remembers you. I remember Dwight got paid, ne? Yeah, ne, let me drop him there. Just a hint, wink, wink, SMS or WhatsApp. It's Musna today. It's WhatsApp, it's Musna.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if people still use SMSs. But yeah.
I don't know.
It's obviously based upon, you know, what can cause, what supposedly looks, what's the thing? Is in trend. But usually, technically, if you think about it, an SMS costs you less than a WhatsApp.
Yeah.
Definitely. But yeah, you were still saying, how does it feel?
Yeah, you know, this is just out of curiosity. Like, do you feel, you know, the...
Under pressure.
You know, under pressure. But here's the thing. One thing that I always think about in terms of my circle of friends from now moving forward will be, I need at least, I get paid month end, you know, we need, you know, in our circle of friends, we need at least, you know, if there are people that get paid, leave my memes alone.
I think you should also be, you should leave the teachers alone with your memes. You do.
Especially during winter. But look, now we have, that came out really fast. But I think every group of friends at least needs someone that gets paid a month end and one or two guys that gets paid in the, on the 20th and the 25th, you know, just to make sure that, you know, the month goes more like, more fluid-ish.
Mm.
Because if you only have, you're a group of five guys and you all get paid only on the, you know, all of you only get paid on the 20th, that means you only get to celebrate once, like, take for example, do all the social activities and stuff on the 20th and that's it. Come month end, you're all depressed. But, speaking of economic depression.
Come month end, you're all,
you're all depressed.
But that is true, right? Oh. Do you know, have you ever assessed how your mood, your psychological disposition, changes like literally if you see your bank balance go like ka-ching, no, go from wah, wah, wah to ka-ching. Sorry for all the special effects, guys. I watched a lot of cartoons. I'm sorry. Go from that thing that I made and the duck sounds and ultimately to ka-ching moments. You technically go like from, it's another day to literally, yes, we feel so motivated. We can literally build a mountain for no reason, even if we don't have engineering degrees behind our names.
The immune system is, you know, all of a sudden it can defeat COVID-19. I mean, it's like something happens to you. Okay, don't try that COVID-19.
Yeah, please start doing parkour if you're a 40-year-old man like Dwight. You know?
Yeah, don't. now let's talk about money on a national level, or maybe to some degree international.
This actually has... It's actually a good thing you started off on that payday discussion.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're actually going to talk about that.
Yeah.
Or it has a feature in our discussion.
The economy is doing wonderfully, according to the, you know, Ugandan, you know, finance minister. You know, I'm here to assure you people and assure the country the economy is now on. But, that was him. Now, to think that he has been a minister of finance since 2015. Now, look. And the best he can do when it comes to updating people on economic performance is
and show you just, you know, how things have been going.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, upwards, you know.
Don't
concentrate on the downside things. Just look at the arrow that is going up.
You know how he defined cryptocurrency?
No.
The money that's floating in the atmosphere.
Oh my goodness, no.
Okay.
We need to leave the...
Look, homeboy knows, I don't know if homeboy does it intentionally, but, you know, every speech he gives, he finds himself trendy. okay, we've got to be serious now. It,
no, really, they shouldn't allow us close to any AFCTA or transnational stuff on Africa. No. Because we'd be asking the first question in terms of, what did you just say? But okay.
Comedy material wise, I was one of those people that was just more into social and more political. There's this a lot of perception, especially in, for the most part in the entertainment industry, that is, you have to find something, relatable. So if you look, that's true of a lot of things, because if you want to send the message across, if it wasn't for the introduction of the whole bread and butter, way of doing things, especially here on Eagle FM, I don't think I would have acquired all the knowledge that I have right now with regards to how you look at, especially both not just national, but also international events. Because a lot of things that takes place, has a way of, of impacting, has a cascading effect to, towards, having a, what you'd call knock-off effect.
Knock-on
effect.
Knock-off, Helmut, is literally to steal something.
It's a good thing I didn't put up after knock, but then.
Well, yeah, you're true. Mm-hmm. There's knock up and there's knock down, but yeah, you were still saying.
For those of you that are like, okay, what, is this mind the gap of home run? We're still home run. And it's still with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM.
Definitely when you hear Dwight, it's home run.
Yeah, it's home run. So, today we're talking about, we're going to talk about the foreign direct investment. Now, this is, our main source of material is coming out of the central bank, more of a collab between the central bank and the, NIPDB. Now, when it comes to the cascading effects that cascading effect of a lot of what happens in the, either on in national or international politics and impacts it has, it seems to more like, generate worldwide is, I started putting the two and two together in the cascading effects of global events during the whole, the recent tension between Pakistan and India. Now, the J-10C that was used by the Pakistani military to take down some of India's Rafael, Dassault Rafael, I think those are French made. Now, that generated a lot of positive impact for the JC stock.
Do you know what did not work?
What?
For example.
What?
You remember all the hardware that was sent to Ukraine?
Oh, no, it didn't work.
American hardware, the NATO hardware that was technically American hardware, British hardware, German hardware that was channeled through NATO to Ukraine. And what I'm talking about, hardware, dear listeners, I'm talking about armored vehicles, armored personnel carriers, guns, even bullets,
bombs, throw the everything.
Besides fuel and food, but literally those particular things. Some of the things, Helmut, it seemed like they weren't conditioned to the conditions of Eastern Europe.
Yeah, that's why I think, and not just that. One of the biggest, especially when it comes to fighters, one of the biggest. One of the biggest challenge Ukrainian Air Force had to face was learning to fly Western
American
fighter jets
with in English or French manuals.
And everything is completely because I think one thing they failed to consider was Ukraine is a former was part of the Soviet Union.
Yeah,
they had a lot. Most of the fighter jets they are used to, or most of the military hardware they are used to, was are the ones that are coming out of out of Russia.
Yeah,
Soviet era type of technology. That's where it's all coming from.
Plus, the manuals were all written in Russian.
Exactly.
Now they had to, these guys had no indication of English. Now they had to learn English, French, Dutch, German. What was the other land that also supplied them with hardware? I think it was Italian as well. Some of the things, but they didn't get like the Eurofighter.
Look, learning how to operate a toaster in a different language, that's hard enough, but learning how to fly a jet, that's a whole different ballgame.
And then they didn't have enough pilots as well.
To
convert as well.
All wars need manpower. You can supply all the guns, but if there's no one to pull the trigger, they're pretty much useless.
Or even to fly the jet.
Yeah, it's flying a jet that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at it, the positive, at least for the, you know, at least for the Sichuan, Cheng Fei, which is, the maker of the J-10C fighter jet that was used by Pakistan, they saw a lot of positive increase in their stock after, you know, what happened in Pakistan.
Mm.
Now, why, now at this point you're looking at it, why does a conflict have to do with someone's stock exchange? Well, obviously, a lot of those ones that are procuring military hardware have been proven, you know what, that works. Because one of the criticisms coming out of the military sphere when it comes to Chinese hardware is because they have never been what they call, what's that, is it battle tested?
Yeah. Or field tested.
Yeah, field tested. Unfortunately, in the world of weapons manufacturing, blowing people up is a marketing strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I know it's a very morbid thing to say.
But unfortunately, that's how it works.
It's the same analysis they also apply to athletes. You can go through all the training. You can get fit on the training ground helmet.
Yeah.
And then everyone will tell you, okay, now we need to see how this person,
does in real life situations.
In the match.
Because that's a whole different ballgame.
Because what people don't realize is you get something known as fitness before, and then you get match fitness. Helmut, have you ever been, talking about, dissected into another reality through fitness?
Okay, I'll give you an example. I'm playing my video games, I'm practicing mode, and then you get in the real life match.
No, Helmut.
And I'm having my behind kicked. I'm like, okay, you know what?
No, perfecting Helmut. No, Helmut. I have to throw your analogy out of the window with that. No, Helmut. No. Look,
those are the only matches I can,
Yeah. But firstly, obviously, you're highlighting one thing. There's a difference specifically in who is used to that level and who is not. True. You are right there.
Uh-huh.
Now, try experiencing that through your body.
In terms of, endurance, like,
endurance, being able to take the knocks,
there's a reason why I do it virtually.
Trying to coordinate, like, your momentum, your body weight.
Like, to act in the moment.
Yeah. And ultimately also your reaction speed and stuff like that. Yeah. Now, part of training or fitness training usually is also to help you with reactionary speed or reactions.
That reaction speed is a killer.
Or like what's the one thing that the one guy said that, what was the thing regarding race cars, like the F1 drivers? It's about how good your reactions are. Mm-hmm. Because remember, like you said a little bit earlier, you can supply all the hardware.
Yeah.
If you don't have the people that literally can be used or trained on the hardware, the hardware is useless.
It's a compliment between the you know what the hardware can do and the person holding the hardware.
Yeah. So what is one of the things, now I'm going to use still the F1 drivers. What is one of the things that the F1 drivers have to undergo? The F1 drivers, Helmut, are probably, they are just as bad as the
fighter jet.
No, the cyclists.
Uh-huh.
The Tour de France and Giro d'Italia cyclists, those endurance cyclists.
Yeah.
Those guys run a strict diet. You can't even deviate. They're just as bad also as horse racing jockeys. A jockey, Helmut, do you know that there are jockeys shorter than you? There are jockeys shorter than you, lighter than you. And when I say I'm lighting, I'm talking about this guy looks...
Okay, shorter than me, lighter than... At this point, are they still alive?
No, these are men. These are real men. These are men that ultimately... They are millionaires because of horse racing, but the discussion out of there is they need to weigh a certain weight because the lighter the jockey, supposedly the faster the horse runs, depending on the kind of horse race. I'm sorry for the sports analogy.
Yeah.
But here's the thing when I get back to the aspect of the F1 drivers, just to sum that up quickly. The F1 drivers, Helmut, I used to watch all their particular sort of like news shows, you know, what they go through, the training and stuff like that. Those guys have to train and they must stay on a certain body weight.
Very strict,
It's like a range that they have to be in. The one that I watched was about Lewis Hamilton, when he was still with Mercedes. Lewis Hamilton, Helmut, goes through training extensively and he has to maintain that even in the off season. The off season is easy season. Think of it like your holiday. Yes, they do have that in Europe.
Literally. Yeah, I've seen their neck training, the, you know, like G-force on how to do all those
I'm
things.
I'm not yet at the G-force.
It's heavy.
I'm not yet at the G-force thing.
Not yet?
Not yet. Because do you know what G-force does to the human body? Specifically the F1 drivers. Those guys become shorter every year because of the G-force. Look, they've got the neck braces. You've seen that thing here.
Yeah.
Where the helmet literally just bumps into, because the G-force, as you're turning a corner, that's where they feel the G-force.
200 kilometers an hour.
Yeah. That's where they feel the G-force, in a corner.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have to turn out into the corner again, the G-force pops their head into the other direction. So the neck brace is always there to support the neck. The head
so
and the neck.
So without it, your head is most likely to snap off.
Your neck would snap off. Or your head would do this.
Eesh.
Because this is, think of it as three or four elephants pushing against your forehead at high speed. You are moving at a high speed and you've got these three or four elephants from the front. Okay, that's a bit heavy. That's a ton each. But it's literally severe weight pushing, of severe force pushing from the front. Now, when I mention that particular thing, these athletes still have to remember all the technology in that time moment, while they are becoming shorter every year.
I have seen the steering wheel.
Yes.
Yeah.
They have to know what DRS is. Do you know what DRS is?
No.
Drag resistant system. Or drag resistant system. Drag resistant system, Helmut, is a, in it, it's, think of it like a battery. It's technically a battery in the car.
Uh-huh.
This car already has an engine, a combustion engine. That energy that the car is producing through moving forward, not through the engine. Remember, the energy from the engine pushes the car forward. But the energy you are creating through your wheels builds up in a, that's where the hybrid system comes for many of these commercial cars. These cars that you find in the retail market.
Yeah.
That builds up to a scenario where you've got this battery collecting what is it called? The kinetic energy from the wheels. It builds up into that battery in the car so that during a specific period in the race, you can use your DRS system where you can switch off the engine and the car is just running on energy from that battery.
Generated from the kinetic energy of the wheels.
Yeah, but you don't actually switch off the engine because it would be a little bit of a problem. It's very difficult to switch on a F1 car.
It doesn't have any ignition.
So it technically means that battery power feeds into the engine power that's already running in the engine, and it literally gives the car that much more power. But it puts so much pressure on the brakes and the wheels, or the tires specifically, the brakes and the tires, because F1 cars have a tendency of sometimes locking up. If anyone knows what the term locking up means when it comes to basic mechanics, as a mechanic, locking up is when you have so much momentum on you, Helmut, and you suddenly press the brake pedal in your car. That's just why they have that assisted braking system, ABS. Before that, it was the wheel drum braking system that like the Golf 2s had, like the Chicos and the City Golfs.
Mm-hmm.
On the brake drum system that the small Golfies had, if you came at a massive speed and you suddenly pressed brake, the brakes would lock up, but you're still sliding.
Inertia.
Yeah, that's the inertia. But that is literally the issue that many people were asking in terms of safety. Yeah, why can't this be improved?
Because at this point, I'm already in the wall.
Exactly. Because you're still moving with that force. It's not like the car is busy stopping like that. And if you try doing that on your bicycle, remember what happens to you? You jackknife.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's you.
Yeah, big time.
It's your face and the pavement getting to know each other pretty well. Now, when it came to the more advanced electronic braking systems, which is that assisted braking system, the one for if you're in rain or in snow that they have from Europe, known as ESP. There's another one that you find also somewhere else. It depends on the car brand as well. But ABS was the most common one that was brought out. ABS was like an electronic assisted braking system that can immediately stop the car. And we're talking like immediately. And in some cases, in some cars, they generated too much power and then the car would also do the same thing. But then sometimes the engine would just shut down, which was a safety mechanism in most cases.
How strong were those seat belts?
I don't want to test it. I weren't in those cars, but I just read about these particular things. We've got to get back onto.
Thank you for going the direction of energy. Now, look at
which,
this.
Yeah, which was good.
The direction of energy, because I have another example that will give us a detour from the summit of the future on energy security.
Yeah.
And diversification, basically, on the diversification, but commercial break.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge as we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage for the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always
Paratus. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Welcome back. The time is 5 o'clock on the dot. We're still with Homeran on Eagle FM. Now, energy of the, you know, summit of the future. The director of International Energy Agency pointed out that still stuck in my head about this year's energy of the future summit that took place in London a few weeks ago was, one thing he emphasized was that if you want to achieve energy security, you want to diversify your energy sources.
Yeah.
That it can be said, it's safe to say that that's very true also for economic, for economic avenues, for economic avenues in terms of investment. Today's discussion, like I pointed out 50 years ago, is about Namibia's foreign direct investment report coming out of a collab between NIPDB and our central bank.
Yeah.
And it's not surprising because it's also true for a lot of developing countries, especially of those found on the African continent, that a lot of our foreign direct investment they say a little bit for positivity in terms of growth taking place there.
Yeah.
But, it's too concentrated in the extractive industry.
And.
Which is not a good idea.
No, it's not. And this obviously is literally the justification, Helmut. Not the justification, but, once again, it just reaffirms the position you and I have pointed towards in every particular show that we've spoken about, specifically about Namibia's economy, has been that the positive economic development is taking place only in one sector. Now, if you had to take away just that sector's performance, then you would be asking yourself a question, oh my goodness, what is happening in the rest of the country? And that was obviously the particular discussion where you and I, we did that, the tourism discussion where the international, the UN tourism chief, the guy that was here, we will still butcher his name.
It's a very long one. I'm not even going to attempt.
Noted.
We're talking about the gentleman from Georgia, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
In that particular, when he was at NUST for that specific engagement regarding tourism as an economic driver, which I was a big proponent of because I can see the benefits, Helmut. Tourism is connected in so many other extra sectors, sister sectors, affiliate sectors, or even it generates subsectors below that literally make money from it. Just to help with that particular indication once again. On the way to the studio here yesterday, I saw a caravan of self-driving tourists with not the cheapest bucky in the world because they were driving the Land Cruiser buckies, the thing that costs 800 to 900,000 Namibian dollars.
Mm.
Hamoud, the business owner of that car rental company has to generate. Let's just play with the scenario. That car rental company guy had to borrow money to buy those cars because what is the item that you are putting up for sale? You're not putting up the experience of driving through Namibia. You're putting up a car that allows the person to go and see Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
And you're telling them, yes, we've got speed points. I've got a invoicing mechanism and technology, and I've hired 5 local Namibians, but I need cars in order to service demand.
Yep.
If you don't have a car, you can't make business as a car rental company. If you're,
it's in the name.
If you're a bed and breakfast, if you don't have a room, a spare room left, you can't make that extra dollar. If you're a hotel, if you don't have extra rooms left, in terms of looking at the demand, you can't sell what you don't have. That is the principle, which shows you that there is potentially going to be an overcapacity to be reached in terms of the demand that Namibia has generated.
Mm.
But once again, Helmut, you don't see tourism, even in this report, as being the leading economic driver in Namibia. You don't see it.
All the emphasis is in the extractive industry.
Exactly.
It's either we're talking about oil and gas, green hydrogen, or fishing,
exactly,
or mining.
Because how the picture I just now depicted to you, how broad do you think the economic analysis would be about tourism sector to go and count every particular impactful element? Because now you have to trace from the car rental company to the hotel to the bed and breakfast to the adventure companies, the companies that sell you experiences. For example, we've had one particular, company that has advertised with us before at the coast. Because they sell you an experience at the coast. And if you go ask them how many of the people that, you know, bought from you were foreigners versus Namibian,
yeah,
they could, you know, based upon that, because this was their particular, intellectual or corporate knowledge or corporate information. But they would give you like a rough estimate, you know, predominantly we get so many and so many and so on. If the two entities, NIPDB and Bank of Namibia, really went and looked at tourism, they would find that tourism would probably be standing neck face to face with the extractive industry. Literally face to face with the extractive industry. The downside is, Helmut, it's very difficult to track and trace the impact of tourism.
Yeah, that's something that was also, you know, pointed out in our economic Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
It's not easy.
It's not easy. You see the activity, but it's not easy. It's not easy to trace it. Now, to factor it back into the impact, the role of the extractive industry,
yeah,
it's literally, firstly, I would call it the optics, meaning a lot more people are talking more about the mining industry as being the industry to be the
silver bullet out,
yeah,
of the economic,
the silver bullet now economic pathway to finding that cloud 9 that we want to. Mm-hmm. And not that there's a cloud 10, just to let you guys know. Mm-hmm. It's an English thing that I had to use.
Yeah, I know.
Someone
pointed out to me that, you know, the fact that there's ombudsman does not mean there's ombudswoman.
And you know, there's actually something that comes from Europe. That word, ombuds. It doesn't come from Africa. I used to think it was an African term until I heard that the English also have an ombudsman.
Yeah.
The English, dear listeners, they've got an ombudsman.
Yep.
But yeah. So the silver bullet thing, Helmut, and for our listeners that saw our poster, yay, you know, on for the day, for today's particular discussion, just to let you know, the question, the hypothesis that we've got in that poster itself speaks to what literally the report does say. But it doesn't actually say it. It just highlights that there is a great dependence
going on,
specifically on supposedly that this one sector, the extractive sector, yeah, well, for now we'll keep it at mining, is making Namibia look good. But if you ask yourself, Namibians, you know, how does it translate into my bank account, into my community development, into my access to opportunities discussion? Can you see it? Have you felt it? Have you interacted with it? Many of you would say no. Many of you would still be saying, I'm waiting on the materialization of SONA, State of the Nation, or even of the inauguration speech that President Nandi Ndaitwah gave back on, was it 21 March? Yeah, 21 March when she was inaugurated. So many of you would still say those particular kinds of things.
Yeah.
So even when you try to do a litmus test, because it would literally be not useless, but the litmus test would, you would actually answer something that you already can see what the answer would be, because you can, you would literally be sitting with superpowers by then because it would be so obvious. It's literally that we need to diversify. Now, what is this? What is in the hypothesis, Helmut? You asked me what I meant by this when we developed the poster's message. The report, this report, even just in the executive summary,
yeah,
spells out something that Namibia has been depending on for too long, and it looked, and it looks too much, Helmut, very close, because we need one element to sort of like take us just over that threshold to be in that category of potentially being exposed to a resource curse.
Yep.
I'm really sorry, but Namibia is literally, whatever we're doing,
we're in a crossfire.
We are positioning ourselves closer and closer and closer to being in a resource curse discussion. I'm really sorry, Hamoud. The Dutch curse is smiling at us because we are gravitating. That black hole is the Dutch curse. And we're literally that lost Star Trek ship just floating in space, nowhere. We forgot to switch on the engine, some of us.
Yeah.
I know, I don't know if we even had like an, if we even had an engineering team, but someone forgot to switch on the engines. And we're just gravitating there.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's something that you can find from, you know, just from the forwards that's coming out of, you know, coming from the NIPDB, NIPDB CEO, that's Nangula Wanja.
Mm.
That Namibia's vision for the future is clear. We must build a more resilient, inclusive, and diversified economy. Now, our economic diversification strategy, anchored in 10 priority sectors, provides a roadmap to reduce dependency on extractive industry and position the country as a leader in sectors such as energy, renewable, green hydrogen, oil, and gas. It's like, really? Okay, am I missing something here? Reduce dependency on extractive, and then, you know, diversification is also more extractive
centered. Yeah.
And then she goes on to point out that chemicals and basic materials, service and digital global business. And then now I'm beginning to agree with her on the transport and logistics, metals, mining. I was like, okay, now that communication. Then you find tourism. Like, okay, so.
Yeah, because when I looked at the priority sectors, the sectors now being prioritized, tourism, and there's another one with tourism at the bottom. The cultural and creative sectors. I was like, these are the first.
You have technology, tourism, and then you have including leisure, business, sports, and medical, and creative and culture industry. Tourism, then creative and culture industry. Way at the beginning there. You don't have, we have these guys way at the tail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's kind of difficult to go through a more of a resource case with these two industries.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
look, those two industries
will
definitely boom.
Yeah.
Just imagine it. There will be a positive knock-on impact.
Yeah.
If there's a resource curse, for example, because there will be people that will have money that will be so good, but you know, they can pay, they can go out and buy things and, you know, go to dinners and stuff. I mean, Helmut, let me show you what a resource curse looks like. I don't know, I'm going to talk about a Dust Bowl country known as the United Arab Emirates. If you're an Emirati, you would know why I'm calling your country a Dust Bowl, because it literally is just dust and sand. There's nothing we can do. However,
Dust Bowl.
I had to watch on YouTube a guy. I don't know where YouTube decided to bring up this thing, but I couldn't understand the thumbnail. The thumbnail is that small little title that they showed that is like the attractive thing. And I read the thumbnail. Yeah, it's the clickbaiting thing.
Yeah.
I read the thumbnail and I sat there thinking, what is so different about putting in petrol in your car in Dubai versus anywhere else in the world. I know in the US it is self-serve. You know, you drive up to the service station, you get out, there's no petrol attendant, and you put in the petrol for yourself, and you swipe at the petrol at the machine.
Mm-hmm.
You swipe there. You put in your card before it releases the nozzle, you know, that thing that you need to put in your card.
Yeah.
You put in your bank card and you put in the petrol yourself. You take mm-hmm. charge. But before that, we've got an ad break.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% of its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it.
Easy money.
Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. AutoCash, it's that simple.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. It's 16 past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. On your mark, set, ready, go.
Yeah, so this particular thumbnail now tried to stand out, and it really stood out, the short video that I had to watch. Helmut, they literally, the guy orders through the car that he has, doesn't matter because it looked like a very luxury car, and we obviously know that Dubai is about opulence and excessive luxury that mm-hmm. they obviously live in, and which is based upon the oil proceeds that every citizen is paid with. He literally ordered for his car to be refilled through his phone, paid through the phone. The business comes, the business people come it looks like a refilling truck, came, refilled his car, and there you go. And there you went.
So it's like a food delivery, but this one is for fuel.
For fuel. The guy literally says, in Dubai, we don't drive to the gas station. The gas station comes to us. And I was like, what? Really?
Okay, but that's going to put an extra price for me to.
But remember, they're an oil producing country.
Oh yeah, for them.
When is Namibia going to see its first barrel?
At 2040. Yeah.
Right there. Right there.
Yep. That's how, and by the way, that's, if you are angry at those numbers, take it up with Deloitte Namibia.
And Minister of Mines and Energy.
Ministry of Mines and Energy.
Yeah.
And for Deloitte Namibia and the Ministry of Mines and Energy, congratulations, you're on a crossfire. That's also on your report. And thank you very much for the update. Now, we are never getting jobs anywhere else. But
yeah, I think too many people listen to us, Helmut.
I'm telling you. just a little off topic, you know, what happens, not this, okay, 2 weekends ago.
Yeah.
No, just 1 week ago.
Yeah.
I meet up with a friend and we go to single quarters from a huge Kapana guy.
Mm.
And, we had our Kapana then or when we were walking out, this other ladies, just walk past us and turns around and is like, you were Helmut. I was like, oh dear Lord. Now right next to her is a guy. I'm like, okay, please don't punch me. Please don't punch. Mm. And then she was like, okay, you know what? I'm a huge fan and we're just there. I'm like, thank you. Then she walks away.
Mm.
My friend looks at me like, yeah, you need bodyguards. Like, I'm like, yeah, for my morning show, that is true.
Yeah.
For the afternoon show, I think I'm still safe on that one. Yeah. Because of the whole live stream thing.
Yeah. We as Eagle FM, we've got some fans that are telling me, you know, Dwight, you need to talk about this and you need to do that. I'm like, yeah, I'm here for the event. I'm not here to come get notes on. Yeah. But I don't say that. But some of the one that has told me that probably would have heard this particular discussion.
Yeah, that's Dwight. moving on the dangerous pathway that we have put ourselves on in terms of economic, the economic progress we are doing.
Yeah.
The positive side is there is economic positivity in terms of foreign direct investment alone.
Yeah.
There was a decline in terms of investment, and then it seems like according to this report, we are experiencing some positive growth in that department.
Yeah.
Except the concentration is what scares not only the two guys here in Eagle FM studio, but also the two institutions that put the report together.
Yeah. And their leaders even.
Yeah.
And their leaders even.
Yeah.
Because.
Like, I mean, it's a good thing we are growing, but the growth is too, more like one-sided. That if anything happens to that industry, would be back to, would be like hitting an economic reset button.
I mean, Hamoud, if you just even read, in Governor Gavagap's
forward.
He's forward. That first sentence he says there, decisions, policy-making decisions should be based upon sound and reliable data.
Okay, that's a punchy.
Now, I also came back from a discussion earlier today where an academic also highlighted specifically, stop trying to rely on data if you're trying to talk about certain particular impacts, for example, that impacts because the marginalized communities which are identified by the government is usually the Sun and the Himba communities. And there's a third one. I think it was you that reminded me that there's a third one that also exists in Namibia. But he also noted that specific academic that usually the guys that collect the data are the guys that are trying to give the solution based upon what they see to the impacted peoples in those particular marginalized groups.
Mm-hmm.
Without trying to consult first with those groups to ask them, you know, what change do you want in your community or in your life in terms of the development pathway you wish to achieve? Remember, Almud?
Like conducting some sort of a survey?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or it would be like the NSA survey that the NSA did pre-census. The NSA did a census mapping exercise. Now, they did two of them. The second one was more like a test run to see, you know, really how the hardware, the systems that they put in place actually would respond to real world, which is once again bringing us back to our fit and match fitness analogy.
Mm-hmm.
But how things would actually work in the field out there when they send all these enumerators. Those were the people that the NSA sent to your house during 2023 to come and talk to you, to count you, to see how many people live in a designated house. The first census mapping they did exercise was one about looking at every building in a town.
Hmm?
Yes, Helmut. I loved that report. Was it in 2023? It came out. I loved that report, Helmut. That report went per region with all the towns in it. That's how you could understand how big was Namibia's public sector service provision and how big was Namibia's private sector footprint in each of these towns outside of Windhoek. To find out, for example, if you go to Gobabis, the largest employer is for the public service, is government, yes. Whether it be the municipality there, the regional authority, or even governmental extension offices that you find in the other regions.
Yeah.
And that the largest private sector employer was the food retailers. Not even the clothing retailers, they went to one specific subsector of the retail market or the retail sector to say it was food retailers that in the private sector were the largest employers outside of the public service. So when you sit with such particular scenarios and you see that the NSA has already done this exercise for you as a regional authority, local authority in Namibia, you're supposed to take that data and you should go like, we should try and change this particular picture by trying to do our own particular developmental initiatives to increase the private sector footprint. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing, Hamut. When you and I highlighted like Nkurunkuru, I'm not coming back to Nkurunkuru. I'm sorry, Nkurunkuru. If you come back to Nkurunkuru, Nkurunkuru is trying to formalize itself, set out its town boundaries, limits, and all those other particular things. What was the first thing that they had to do? They had to convince the locals of Nkurunkuru to buy the land that the local was already living on. Remember the registration and transference discussion that the town planner lady spoke about last year?
In terms of how the ownership transfer process confused a lot of locals. Yeah.
Exactly. Because the moment you set up, local authority zones, where you've got residential areas, people need to show deed, title deeds and all that particular things that they own this land.
Basically proof of ownership.
Because you can't have a traditional authority in a town. And a town can't be in a traditional authority. Because the discussion of development for Namibia is you need to be able to channel development through urban areas. The urban areas need to be under Ministry of Urban and Rural Development.
Yeah.
But like you and I found out, communal land boards or communal areas are found under Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform. Which ultimately shows you the dilemma that exists in Namibia's particular pathway between these two ministries. Because Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform, Helmut, they are in charge of if you as a traditional authority decides to go in, you need a borehole. You need a borehole to access underground water.
Mm.
You can't go and ask Ministry of Urban and Rural Development.
Ministry of Agriculture.
You have to ask Ministry of Agriculture. You have to go and buy a permit under the Water Management Act of 2013. You have to go buy that permit.
Yeah.
From the Ministry of Water. Now, NAM Water falls under the aspect of Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform. Because NAM Water, in some aspect, is in charge of a resource that falls under the mandate of Ministry of Water, of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform. Ministry of Urban and Rural Development has all the local authorities. Do you understand? Do you see the dilemma popping up now?
Man, that's one process.
Do you see the dilemma popping up now?
Yeah.
Now, when you also look at the scenarios right there, technically, every time, for example, like a town council like Rundu and is it Rundu or is it Katima? Which one was it that's number one above Rehoboth? Because Rehoboth was number two in terms of owes the most water, the largest bill.
Number one.
No, who was number one? Was Katima or Rundu?
Rundu.
Rundu.
Yeah.
A place that sits with water.
Oh yeah, I made a whole show on that.
Yeah, I know. I remember that particular station.
I thought I was going to be excommunicated from my region after that show.
But when you look at Rundu and Rehoboth, imagine Ministry of Urban and Rural Development owing Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform a bill.
Yeah.
Do you understand how funny this looks?
Yeah.
Do you also understand technically what can hold back development in each of these particular urban areas? Because you can see someone somewhere is not doing proper public accounting. Or don't have enough. Something is going on with the accounting on the ground. And I'm not alluding to any corrupt activities, Steelers.
No.
Potentially it might be, because it would probably mean that someone is earning a salary, but they're not doing the job that they were actually paid to do. And they're allowing a bill to grow so extensively large without really solving the issues that are feeding to this particular problematic picture.
When you look at it, when you look at this whole foreign direct investment discussion from a diversification standpoint, when investors and they are local investors, but these ones we are just looking at the foreign ones.
We are looking
at the foreign ones now. I really wish you could have the the same report, but for local ones to see if they are also predominantly found in the in the same industry. That's also one where we are trying to diversify our economy from. But the question now, the question now, and I think this is one of the biggest challenge for the NIPDB is how do you motivate foreign investors not to invest in what you want to diversify from?
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Ouri omunangeshefa nowahala kushivifa omayakulo oye okupitila mohulike radio station oyo yo Eagle FM enyamukulo olongaha ninge kwatafano na Monica koshikondo sheipindi konora 8-1-7-1-4-7-1-6 that is 0817147116 mombelewa konora 8-3-2-8-3-4-3 ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na opo umone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
28 minutes left to the hour of 6. You are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. So how the dilemma here, or more like the biggest question is, how do we entice, more like market other avenues of investment for foreign investors, for them to, how do we market other avenues of investment to foreign investors that are not extractive industry oriented?
It's going to be difficult.
Because while for one, everyone that shows up is like, well, where do you guys discover the oil? Well, can I have some?
Yeah.
Now you can't tell him, oil, but how about tourism?
Don't you want to go and establish a pharmaceutical manufacturing plant in our country? Then go like, did you see what I make?
Yeah.
Did you see what I operate in?
Yeah.
Am I interested in working in pharmaceuticals?
And also you have to understand that before they show up and to show interest in investment, they have consulted their army of investment advisors. They were told, okay, now if this is the country you want to go invest in, what is more like economically trending is this avenue, and this is what you want to invest in. Now when you show up and then we'll take for example a representative of that entity shows up, and then you are telling them, you know what, I know you want, you want to invest maybe in the fishing industry or more like the mining industry or the green hydrogen, but don't you want to save a few bucks for the creative sector, for the tourism industry, or maybe we have, you know, green hydrogen, not green hydrogen, well, green scheme projects, and now, you know, brown scheme project. Don't you want to invest in that? Now, if they are nice enough, they will just maybe, I don't know, try to, okay, can I have, now I think that will be one biggest blow in the face. Can I have some of the information on how that industry is doing? Do you have any collected data that will convince me so that I don't take your words for it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I have some?
And then they tell you, well, you know, we first have to talk to some of the particular ministries and agencies. And you were like, but I thought you had this data already.
Yeah.
I thought you had this data already.
Well, we have some of the data here. We can give them to you. And then you look at the date they're coming from, 2022. We'll be like, is this the latest you have? Yes, sir. Right. Then, which direction is your oil industry?
Oh, do you know what's actually a more funny sort of like view of also how people have looked at the economy of Namibia? So back in 2022, Helmut, this was with the former colleague, the one former colleague we had here, also at Eagle FM. We were talking about a particular dimension regarding youth unemployment. And he pops up and he says, yeah, go and do this and go talk about youth unemployment in this discussion. I said, no, why can't we talk about unemployment as a whole because of the particular impacts from COVID, which has happened?
Yeah.
And then he said, no, you've got to look at the labor force survey of 2018. I said, 2018?
In 2020?
No, this was in 2022. The reason why I frowned and I question mark and I quizzed things, and this is also how a lot of particular journalists also don't realize the relativity of data sets. You see, Helmut, when you come to me with a data set of 2010, and between
this, you want me to make billions of dollars worth of decision on that
on data that is from 2010.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you the question, what relativity does that have to today's needs?
So you guys have remained static, which is said, if you have remained static, I'm not investing in that because, well, there's no growth.
Because now it looks like all the hope is placed on you to move from that static position forward. Do you think there's an investor that likes that particular responsibility? No, they just want a position into an economic system and situation that is already moving.
Look, you and I have talked about the risks involved in the, in investing in the oil in, only oil exploration. Let's just take oil exploration.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Ishobon pointed out, just how much a seismic survey costs.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a lot of money that someone is coming to put in your economy here. So unless you have to provide a lot of latest statistics regarding each and every sector that you want them, sectors that you want to diversify in, that you want to convince them into investing into, they'll be like, okay, so, because if I want to invest in, take for example, in Namibia's agricultural sector, and you're providing me with the latest, green scheme that are going on, and for how long have you been doing this? What challenges have you encountered? How have you handled those challenges? And what's your backup plan for any challenges that may arise? There are a lot of things to consider. Now, I'm not a millionaire. And I'm scared to pull out $20 out of my pocket for, just one funny story. I swear, I bought $10 a time for $12.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. Am I missing something here? When I recharge these, the guys that operate this institution will take out their like $1 something bucks. And now I'm giving extra $2. I'm caught in the middle here. So, can't you guys reach an agreement to just, because serious, what the heck? Now, diversifying is a very easy way to say.
Yeah.
Let's diversify our economy. But the question is how? Because everyone seems to know us for the recent oil and gas discovery. Now, the reason why a lot of people, and we saw this with the, with the Dutch resource case, it's actually one of the reasons that lead a country that's more natural resources reliant to end up in a Dutch resource case.
Mm.
That's because, a lot of people, a lot of investors, can take a risk putting billions of their dollars in take oil exploration, because the return on investment in extractive industry is mind-numbingly huge compared to other sectors.
Yeah.
Now, invest in agriculture. And now, let's just put yourself in the shoe of a foreign investor. You have your billions of dollars. Someone now, and then you go into you come into a country that is still has an oil and gas industry that's still in its rudimentary stage. Very easy to participate when everything is at the beginning stage. Now, and then you are told, you know what? How about tourism? Now, one thing that that we have also discussed here on Home Run is that our tourism industry is doing way better than a lot of other countries.
Yep.
So, yeah. And we are actually, interesting enough, being used as a textbook example.
No. Rephrase that sentence. We are actually being considered and championed as the template to what even developed and large economies should try and emulate.
What to do if you want to develop your tourism sector?
How to approach if you want to develop your tourism sector?
But that sector is the one that we are sidelining. Oh, come.
The greatest. We're still sidelining it that's why I said, Mus, look at the optics.
Yeah.
Look at what people are saying. Look at how people are framing this discussion. I'm not coming in here with my media, what's they call it? That, my media.
Lingo?
No, my media theory analysis. So media theory, they look at, out of what perspective are you looking at things? Meaning, are you someone that's potentially that has shared a similar kind of an experience, like the subject matter that's being shown to the audience or that they listen to? Or are you, let's for example, say an expert in this, or you are some sort of a direct authority in this particular discussions.
Mm-hmm.
I kid you not, Helmut. The moment you put something at the bottom of a list, it becomes forgettable. If you have a list, and you have something at the bottom.
So when it comes to stakeholder engagements, not a lot of them are being held about there are more stakeholder engagements, which is leading up obviously to the optics, like you pointed out, about the extractive industry as opposed to other sectors.
Yeah. So now you and I, for example, media commentators, we will be hooked on, for example, what the executive summary says and that's not just you and me. Yeah. Believe you me. There'll be very few people that will go through that report like you and I have gone through it and will literally dissect chapter per chapter per chapter that report. Obviously, if they're trying to write an article about it, it's going to be a very small article because they will be told you only have up to 700 words to write something about
this. That's a 40 pages document. So you can't fit it on an article.
You can't fit it in one article. It's impossible. However, in terms of our discussion, we obviously don't have any limitation because we have from 4:30 to 6. So we can fit in as many things as condensed as possible. The concern about listing priority sectors, like that little listing they did, where they threw the culture and the tourism sector at the bottom.
Yeah.
I recognize that the culture and creative sector is very small, Helmut.
Yeah.
You and I, we know this.
Yeah.
We recognize this. This is literally a newborn baby that has been newborn for 35 years. Don't worry, guys.
Yep.
Yeah, it has been newborn for 35 years.
35 years old baby.
But then the guy that's just above it, the sibling just above it, tourism, is literally, what was that biblical story about the lost son?
The
prodigal son. It's literally the prodigal son. The tourism sector, dear listeners, is literally the prodigal son.
Yeah.
Because the tourism sector, Helmut, is not there to damage the natural environment, like the oil and gas.
It's actually there to preserve.
Yeah, it's actually there to preserve. It's not like the mining.
Two beds with one stone, if you look at
it. It's not the oil and gas. It's not agriculture. Yeah. It's not fishing. It's not construction even. It is there to generate money from beauty, from preservation and conservation efforts. And to assist rural development efforts even, because you would be giving the people direct jobs. My goodness. You're talking about two birds struck with one. I see a legion of birds struck down with one very small pebble. But yeah.
Yeah, until we find ourselves in a Spanish situation where, believe me, they don't want tourists.
No, because they've had over tourism, them and the city of Venice.
Yeah.
Because Venice came in with a 5 euro tax. If you just land in Venice and you just show that you have a different passport, you're like, okay, you so take your 5 euro extra. 5 euros is $100. I mean, that's like you getting into the best club ever in Windhoek, which doesn't exist. 5 euros is heavy. It's a heavy charge just to walk around on the street as a tourist, to look lost, get a little bit of sunburn, eat a little bit of overpriced food.
Overpriced food.
Well, the whole of Europe has overpriced food in Namibian standards.
What? Okay, you know,
I told you the can of Coke.
$400 steak.
I told you that, and the can of Coke across Europe. Sorry for that, guys, for barking off, you know. But when you look at those particular things, even them, these other developed countries and zones and advanced economies, they also misunderstand the impact that their tourism sectors carry. What has now happened in Trump, in America under Trump? All those states that border onto Canada, because of all the optics that the Canadians have seen, all the negative optics that the Canadians have heard from Donald Trump and Donald Trump's administration.
Yeah.
What did the everyday Canadian say? Helmut, they had tourists, and I've told you this on the other particular show that we had in 2 weeks back. They've had tourists that come and watch NFL football matches. Those bed and breakfasts, these are small MSMEs that Donald Trump has literally killed just by saying, we need to hit tariffs on the Canadians. Now the Canadians go like, I'm keeping my Canadian dollar in my pocket.
Okay, fine, I'll watch it on TV.
They won't even watch it on TV. Remember, this is a product exported to them.
Yeah.
They're now technically also boycotting American products. Helmut, there's a city, the city of Ontario. Or is it a state? But it's literally a city that's right opposite Detroit. Now, if you understand the automotive history, the automotive industrial history of the United States, the city of Detroit is known as Motor City. It was the heartland of the United States' auto manufacturing. General Motors, Ford, who's the other one that's also there? General Motors, Ford, it wasn't cheap. There was another brand. But they made all their cars there. There was so much innovation running wild in that country. Remember, that's the country that came up with the automatic gearbox in the 1950s. The automatic gearbox. It's an old technology. They came out with that. From that city. So, in the world of globalization, what happened? Now, in 2025.
The knock-on effect.
So, because of Trump's optics, the noise he's making, the things he's saying, the Canadians realized when he came with 2 April, Liberation Day, with the tariffs, when he showed up with 2 April with his color-coded...
With a formula, I don't think he understands.
That everyone debunked on that first day. When he showed up with that thing, and Canada was also the Canada and Mexico, that city... That is right opposite Detroit. So there's a river that's the natural border between the US and the Canada on that section of the border system. The Canadian city on this side, added value to specific car parts that were manufactured in Detroit opposite that Canadian city. So it would move up and down that bridge, the value addition. Would move up and down that bridge. Constant economic activity. Tires would be made here. The bumper is made here. The windscreen is made there. The car is assembled in Canada, but the car is sold under American sort of like trade statistics, because all it just shows is that the semi-finished car goes across the bridge or across the river into Detroit, and then it is put there and it's sold into the American market. But it was literally a trade mutually beneficial system that benefited one company with multiple companies around it who were manufacturing the various parts. It's not the Peugeot, it's not the Peugeot thing, Helmut. It's not the Peugeot thing that's shipped from one continent to another.
May as well just rename Valve's Bay to Peugeot at this point. Okay, sorry guys.
I also fell into the colloquial thing of saying Peugeot.
Oh, Peugeot.
I was supposed to have the French pronouncement Peugeot. But anyway, so with that particular indicator, literally that whole relationship was spoiled just because of 2 April, what Donald Trump did.
Liberation Day.
But before we continue, we've got a short live read to quickly get into. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. This is a Velvice University live read. Velvice University September Intake 2025 for all the programs that are fully accredited by the NQA. Certificate in Health Sciences Foundation Level 4. This is a 1-year full-time course available at all campuses. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse or Nurse Midwife and Accoucheur for Level 6. This is a 2-year full-time course available in Windhoek, including Kuru, Kombat, Walvis Bay, Katimamulilu, and Otapi. For the Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6, this is a 2-year course full-time available in Windhoek. Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours. This is a 4-year full-time course available in Windhoek, including Kuru, Kombat, Walvis Bay, and Katimamulilu. Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing, Level 8. This is a 1-year full-time course available in Windhoek. Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8. This is a 1-year full-time course available in Windhoek. Application period runs from 1 May to 30 June 2025. For more information, call 061-225-463 or 061-225-463 or 462. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. So yeah, just getting into the last 10 minutes there, Hamoud. If you're going to mess around in an economy, you don't want to do what Donald Trump has been doing since 20 January. And we are just in the first 100 plus days. However, for us, Namibians, and also the broader economy, with this particular FDI report, we now have a very clear indicator, even though our Bible has said very clearly to us as well, and what you and I have also been talking about, for the past year and a half so far, is we need diversification.
Diversification, it may seem, is needed in not only in energy, but pretty much throughout, because Fatih Birol pointed, he used the classical all eggs in one, in one basket example. That you don't want to get all your energy, that, 100% of your energy from the sun. Because what happens when your solar system or, when your solar energy generation system fails? What happens? In terms of energy generation, I'm one of those people that used to ask myself, why don't we just have a bunch of solar panels scattered across the, the Sahara Desert? Then you ask yourself
Namib Desert.
Whether it's Sahara or Namib, yeah. There's all one problem that you hinted to yesterday. That's sandstorms.
Plus
solar panels. Plus sandstorms, not too good friends.
There was someone that actually, since you mentioned that, there was someone actually that tried that thing in the Sahara Desert. I just don't remember if it's not in Libya, but it was either in Egypt or in Tunisia side of the neighborhood, or in Algeria side of the neighborhood of the Sahara Desert. Helmut, the sun, the heat that exists in the Sahara Desert, besides sandstorms, the heat
itself
was literally, look, the rate of deterioration of those solar panels is speeds up quicker because of the harsh condition or the harsh environment that you're installing the thing in.
Unless you have to build one heck of a solar panel that is...
It's like one massive thing that almost looks like a satellite dish. Maybe. Look, they can do that, But obviously, in terms of the installation work, obviously people are thinking about, you know, cost effectiveness. You're trying to keep the cost as low as possible. So you show up with a guy that does innovative welding.
And also the manpower.
And he does pop rivet connections, you know. He shows us with his pop rivet gun and his welding gun. And then it's five guys, you know, it's Joseph, Jacob, Peter, and Koos on the other side. You know, Koos is the team leader. So Joseph, Jacob, and
Koos is always the team leader.
So Joseph, Jacob, and Peter, you know, they're literally the guys that have to do, you know, holding the stuff
here. The ones that are going hands-on.
Yeah, and they're literally the ones even standing there in the sun, baking, literally, you know, obviously turning 50 shades of sunburnt in that scenario. And they're the ones that, obviously, that's the cost effectiveness that they come up. So they presented a solution by saying, listen, we're the subcontractor of the contractor, and we believe you need to put up these innovative steel frames. But now that steel frame gets hot because of the heat that you're in the desert with. And that heat permeates or transmits into, because remember, Helmut, what many people forget about is that the earth is actually a reflective surface.
Yeah.
So when sunlight comes through the atmosphere and it comes into this atmosphere where we are land level, sunlight and heat bounces off the surface. So it's bouncing off currently as we're sitting. It's bouncing off this roof. It's bouncing off you as you walk in the street. It bounces off the road. Have you ever walked in on a really hot day down the street here where our studio is?
Yeah.
On your way to heat us.
Yeah.
In the street, just in the street, if you walk on this pavement at 1 o'clock when the sun is pretty high and pretty potent at that time, have you felt how the sunlight, the heat deflects from the road?
Yeah.
Into your face.
Tight, black, so perfecto.
So you've got heat, you've got sunlight. Not a good combination, obviously, of you know, negative impact. Mm. Literally driving a negative sort of like feeling into you as a person, because you now have to walk around this
heat basically radiating on you.
Exactly. Now imagine what that does to something that stands still 24/7.
And at this point, you know, you have to give, you know, you have to give it up to the engineers behind the construction of the pyramids. Because, I mean, that thing had been standing in that harsh environment for literally, what, like over 4,000-5,000 years now? But, so the challenge we are facing in terms of, you know, in terms of, okay, one of the biggest challenge we are facing in terms of foreign direct investment is basically coming out with means and ways to channel some of the foreign investment into other sectors, because they're all just showing up. I'm here for oil. I'm here for the extractive mining, yeah. Oil. Yeah. But, and then, we are the host of all these activities. We are going, it's a good thing you guys are investing, but, you know, we are sensing in a long run, you know, any economic fallout here, because the oil industry alone, according to the Deloitte Namibia report, one thing that we saw in the projection is that these guys were, you know, I mean, genius level, because they are looking at everything from exploration all the way to decommissioning.
Mm.
Now, look at the decommissioning part. That's where you are looking at when we are having the discussion around diversification, because even if you have a surge in foreign direct investment in that sector, what happens during decommissioning now? You are, you know, at this point you are looking at half your economy is reliant on that part, is reliant on that sector.
Yeah.
One institution that I remember decided to put up information that they will be cutting the number of their employees. B2Gold, remember?
Yeah.
And
last year.
Yeah.
No, they announced it in 2023 for 2024.
And I was here, and there were a lot of questions coming out of the obviously the communities, like, no, what's going on here? What are they doing? But look. If the resources is out, I'm not going to stay and keep people and then keep giving them free money, because that's what I'll be giving them. Because if the resources is not there, they are not doing anything unless they just have to pretend to dig.
Do you know what's the worst thing, Helmut, of that particular kind of reactions, for example, that happened in 2024? And I read the press release that the CEO of BT Gold at that stage had, because he literally also placed the same, they placed the same ad as a full page ad in our Villager e-paper as well.
Yeah.
And I read the whole thing because I wanted to understand. I was obviously doing research in terms of trying to understand, okay, should I use this as a subject matter back then for the business and economic segment mm-hmm. later in that week? And then I read the statement and they highlighted that this particular activity at this mining facility
uh-huh.
has reached its end.
Yeah.
Its lifespan.
Yeah. And that's true for all natural resources.
Sources, yeah.
They are finite.
They are finite. They're gonna end.
Yep.
Now, for Namibians to think that this is now a Bangladesh situation where, because the dad had a job there at this place,
mm-hmm.
now the son or the daughter must also have or inherit a job there as well when yeah. the father retires.
Yeah.
We are not in India, because I've heard about that thing in India. We're not in Bangladesh, because we've now seen what has happened. Because
it's what led to the protest. Yeah.
The protest last year in Bangladesh.
More like a riot, but yeah.
Where do Namibians come up with this particular idea that this particular company will be there forever? This particular activity that this company is doing will be there forever.
No.
It doesn't work that way.
Tourism, maybe.
Yeah.
But extractive industry, absolutely not.
Even the source ends.
Even the oil that we are so excited, we haven't even reached installation of the right infrastructure.
Yeah.
And which will then lead to the production phase.
Yeah.
But at the end of that report, at the end of that, at the end of that blueprint that you find in that report is decommissioning.
Yeah.
It may go up to 2060, 2070, maybe 2100, but the point is, the resources is gonna run out sooner or later.
Exactly.
And when it does, you wanna have an economic, an economic landscape that is diversified, because it's, if it's too concentrated, you are looking at, again, the Dutch example.
Mm.
A lot of things that seems to be positive in the beginning that happens when when you are looking at it. It's more like, how do I put this? It's a, it's like a piece of candy
mm.
that has a hot metal ball at the center.
Mm.
Yeah. If it's not carried out properly. Because one thing that you see is that, your economy is booming because of the revenues coming out of that specific natural resources.
Yeah.
But what that leads to is that, all your economy then becomes to rely on these specific natural resources, not only in terms of economic activities, but also in other activities. Take, for example, education, because everyone now is going to be working their heads off to acquire skills that will enable them to work in that specific industry.
Mm.
And by the time that resource runs out, you realize that you don't have anyone with farming experience anymore.
Mm.
Everyone was busy trying to figure out how to get into the oil and gas industry. Except, now the oil and gas is gone. You have the skills, but you can't apply them anywhere because, you don't have the resources.
Which is also another particular thing. For example, it's a good thing you also highlighted farming. That's also under threat because, and this is a particular discussion that I hope Ministry of Agriculture does a report on this particular thing. The aspect in terms of how many commercial farms, private commercial farms, have been converted from being animal husbandry, having agriculture
yeah.
as their business model, converted into a tourism lodge, hunting lodge, game farm discussion. Helmut, when I went to that Rock Art Earth Day celebration thing at the FNCC, where I actually went there for the Total Energies Venus oil find public stakeholder engagement discussion, mm-hmm. and I stumbled upon this Earth Day presentation happening there simultaneously in the cinema. So I decided, okay, since this one was not really fitting into the discussion that I wanted to achieve, I exited quickly went into that cinema thing to sit there during the Earth Day presentation. And it was this French academic that was talking about this particular rock art discussion. And she gave us there a clear indicator, just for us to end off on this particular note. She gave us a clear indicator, Helmut, that there is the Erongo Mountains are, there's literally a border, a line, a fence that divides communal land from
private farmland.
Mm-hmm.
Communal land is where our previous discussion, the UIS illegal mining, lithium mining discussion report, is on that side of the mountain.
On the communal land.
On the communal land area side of the mountain. And on this side of the mountain is a whole bunch, it's like 5 or 6 or 7 private farms that have, each one has a piece of the Rongo Mountains in their locality.
Yeah.
Or in their, what you call it?
In their enclosure.
Yeah, in their surface area. Yeah, enclosure. And to find out that the most profitable tourism activity for rock art visits, this is part of Namibia's cultural heritage, remember?
Yep.
Most of the activity is on the private land discussion. Because the private farmers or these private landowners have invested in business activities to enhance the experience to tours, the tourists and visitors.
Yeah.
Whereas the guy on the communal land side of things, he also sits with one or two sites that have rock art.
Mm-hmm.
But because these private landowners have literally cultivated their market, meaning they went and promoted to tour guides. Please, I've got rock art here in that area of, and it's pretty close to Omaruru. It's pretty close to Omaruru. Cause she showed us a geographic, you know, like that Google Maps illustration, side of things. It's pretty close to Omaruru. So you drive to Omaruru, if you're driving from Manning, you drive to Omaruru and then you get on that gravel road that I've been on before going to Okombaye. And Okombaye would be before you get to that particular discussion, to the Rongo Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just to realize how quick it is to get there, how easy it is to get there. And you see the visualization, what this French academic had to now come and present to us, because her next particular statement after that was that the economic activity derived from this cultural resource. Yeah. This cultural resource. You see it more apparently, more obvious, and it's generating more dollars on the private lands, the private side of things, the private business side of things, as opposed to when you leave it open to the communal land side of things, where they also have rock art, but that guy
has monetized it in any way.
No, but that guy has no means and no resources to try and market himself.
Yeah.
And it's one guy, Helmut, one guy. That's what that rock art, historian said. It's one man in the communal land. He is the only one that is taking up this cultural aspect.
Everyone else?
Well, you and I did the UIS illegal mining discussion. You obviously saw the fixation that was going on there.
People
thought they were participating in lithium mining.
So both on a national level and even
on a community level,
we are still, you know,
the optics are what is misleading Namibians.
Extractive. Well, diversification. Oh, okay. Here's the thing. Natural resources are going to run out. There's nothing you or I can do.
Yeah.
It's going to run out.
It is.
So diversification, then it's a pretty good point to bring up as a topic.
No,
with that. Yeah. With that, we have to hand off to the business and economic segment guys. So until tomorrow, same time, same place.
Don't worry, dear listeners. We'll come up with some, we'll have some nice things again for tomorrow. Don't worry.
Absolutely.
And that is not a promise. That is a fact.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.